made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him, because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So the administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king and said, "O King Darius, live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, O king, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the laws of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed." So King Darius put the decree in writing. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room, where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. 3 times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. And these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. "Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or man except to you, O king, would be thrown into the lion's den?" The king answered, "The decree stands in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." Then they said to the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays 3 times a day." When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to the king and said to him, "Remember, O king, that according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed." So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve, continually rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he couldn't sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lion's den?" Daniel answered, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O king." The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language throughout the land, "May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed, his dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions." So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. And God bless to us that reading from his word. Excuse me. So, all of you have heard Daniel and the Lion's Den before, haven't you? Yeah, because, you know, it's quite a good one to tell kids, because it's great to talk to children about people being ripped apart by lions. And we know what it's about, don't we? Oh, you're learning. Well done. None of you said yes, because that's just that would give me a way out, wouldn't it? I could just go, well, fine, if you know all about it, I can go home and we'll just sing the last couple of hymns and that'll be it. We're in the middle of, well, nearly the end of our series, God Who Protects. Comforting and protecting aren't that different, are they, really? But this is what we're looking at today. I want you, however, to just come back slightly in time. I want you to go to the 19th century. None of you are old enough to remember the 19th century, but I'd like you to go to the 19th century. And it's the House of Lords. And the Earl of, I'm going to get this wrong, but it's the Earl of Derby, as far as I'm concerned, stands up in the House of Lords and he says the following. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Okay? Do you know what he was talking about? Rosemary might, because I've witted onto it. Well, you just don't listen to anything I tell you. There you go. So, he was talking about something that had happened in the Catholic Church, which shouldn't really matter too much to Britain. And that was the declaration in the 1800s of papal infallibility. Okay? So the Pope couldn't be wrong. And so the Earl of Derby was warning against this. He said, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And we use this quote in all sorts of areas of life, don't we, to try and make our point that people are perhaps not doing things for the right reasons and that sort of thing. I find it fascinating that the idea of papal infallibility was only come up with by the 1800s. You'd have thought it would have been earlier, wouldn't you? But no, papal infallibility was only come up with in the 1800s, and what made it worse was the Pope didn't want it. He said, this is ridiculous. But his cardinals said, oh no, you ought to be able, you know, you are God's representative on earth. Therefore, whatever you say, people should just go with. So whenever the Pope issues a papal bull, which is the official document from the Pope, and they're always titled by the first two words in Latin, because they only ever write them in Latin, because everyone speaks that these days. But they're always titled by that. Whenever you issue a papal bull, people should take that as that's it. You've thought about it, and you have a direct line to God. Now, I'm talking to a room full of non-conformists, so you're all sat there going, oh, silly Catholics. Okay, that's fine. But do you see a comparison? With the laws of the Medes and the Persians, that the king can say something and it can't be repealed. The only way a papal bull can be rescinded is to send out another one that contradicts it. And they came up with all sorts of fantastic ideas in the Catholic Church in the 1800s. So, for example, did you know that the Immaculate Conception wasn't come up with until the 1800s? And it doesn't refer to who you think it does. I'm going to do a quick question. Who does the Immaculate Conception refer to, David? No. Mary. It's not... You see, I got so confused when I was told that, I just gave up. Mary is apparently immaculately conceived because that means that she can be perfect, therefore the Holy Spirit, because she's not touched by flesh and was created. This adds a whole new layer of confusion on. But that wasn't come up until the 1800s. And so you have this absolute confusion and you get yourselves in a complete mess. And we can sit there and we can say, aren't the people of Daniel's time really silly? Aren't the Medes and the Persians a bit thick? And only 150 years ago, we kind of did the same thing. We've raised people to positions that they really shouldn't be in and generally don't want. You know, a local story, allegedly, about this guy called King Canute, who allegedly told the tide to get back near Ocean Village. If you look, there's a plaque up and everything. If you don't believe me, seriously, I don't think it was there. I think it was actually further east. But there you go, they've claimed it. And there are two stories about King Canute, aren't there? One is that he was so proud that he thought he could hold back the tide. And one was that he was going to prove to his courtiers, who were basically sucking up to him, that it was impossible for him to hold back the tide. And so he goes down in history as either a guy trying to prove a point or a complete idiot. And we talk about King Canute as this complete idiot, don't we? Most of the time, Canute tried to hold back the tide. He didn't, actually, but that's not the point. Canute tried to hold back the tide. Throughout history, we have done this to people. We have raised them to levels that they never wanted to be in, and they end up making mistakes. Or they begin to believe their own press and make even bigger mistakes. This is how tyrants and despots come about. So that's our first kind of rider for this. I don't want you to hear about the story of Darius and think Darius was foolish. Yes, he was foolish, but we've done exactly the same thing. The second thing I want you to hear about is the fact that Daniel's faith was so strong that he was more concerned with upsetting God than he was about ending up in a lion's den. Why would you have that faith? How do you get a faith like that? Do you get a faith like that because you've read it in a book? You get a faith like that because you've had an experience of God. That in history, you can look back and you can say, God's touched my life here. He's touched my life here. He's touched my life here. He's never let me down. He's never forsaken me. He's always been with me. Even though at the time I might have felt lost, actually, he was there. And if everything about God is true, and everything that I've experienced about God is true, then I can't upset him. When Isaac Watts writes the wonderful hymn, When I Survey the Wondrous Cross, final verse, love so amazing, so divine, demands my life, my all. That's the life that Daniel is living. And now I want you to think about how it must have felt to be Daniel and to be thrown into that lion's den. You want a test of faith? That's a test of faith. As you get thrown into the lion's den, are you thinking to yourself, oh gosh, it's all going to be lovely and fine? What larks, Pip? I don't think Daniel was thinking that. I think Daniel was scared. And we know how ravenous these lions are, because before the people hit the ground, they've overpowered them and crushed their bones. That doesn't happen when Daniel's thrown into the lion's den. Daniel's thrown into the lion's den, and Darius does something. And here's maybe where his law of the Medes and the Persians works. Darius prays that God would protect him. May the gods you serve protect you. Now that's pretty amazing. Darius is not held up as this great paragon of virtue, is he? Darius doesn't even believe in God until we get to the end. But Darius doesn't believe in God. But he has enough faith that Daniel believes in that God to pray to God. Now, God hears the prayer of the unbeliever. That should encourage us. God reaches out to us and he comforts even those who don't know him. And whilst Darius might have a bad night, I don't think it's anything in comparison to the night Daniel has. Darius doesn't have anything to eat, and he has no entertainment and he can't sleep. Daniel's probably sat in the corner of a cave going, please don't eat me, please don't eat me, please don't eat me. An angel of the Lord appears to Daniel and he shuts the mouth of the lions. And what does Daniel say? Daniel says that I wasn't found guilty in his sight and I've never done you any wrong. So therefore God, who's a God of justice, steps in and he says, this isn't happening. Does that mean bad things don't happen to good people? That's nonsense. But in this particular instance, God steps in and he protects Daniel. Because Daniel has done nothing wrong, and it is a major witness to the power of Daniel's God. So, we have Daniel at the bottom of this den. I always know why it's the bottom of a den. I don't think it... I can't know, but I don't even know whether it's... I've always got this image of it being in the floor, but I'm not sure you'd keep lions in the floor. Yeah, I think it might be okay. I don't know. There's nothing that it doesn't add to the sermon. Anyway, but we've got Daniel in there. It's sealed. It's locked up. It's dark. And who does he find? An angel. He finds light suddenly in the midst of darkness. He finds hope in the midst of despair. The ravenous beast that was there in order to destroy him suddenly aren't hungry and have all turned vegetarian. What, sorry? Just stood there salivating, waiting for breakfast. But you've got this fascinating experience. Does this perhaps tell us something about the God that we worship and the God that we serve and the God that we follow? Now, I don't know about you, but because I'm more than two, I've had difficult times in my life. You may well have experienced that yourself. If you have never had a difficult time in your life, you're not real. Okay? I've had difficult times in my life. And I've had difficult times where I feel like everyone's been against me, and I feel like I've been at the bottom of a pit, and that the ravenous beasts are waiting in order to consume me. But I've walked out of it with no harm. I'm upright, still here. To quote Simon, I'm looking at the daisies and not pushing them up. There are points where we might think it's just too much. But that's when we need to trust in the God who protects us and comforts us. God doesn't leave Daniel at the mercy of the lions. God's there in the middle. Now, if you remember what I said about Advent, Advent's a time of fasting and penitence. Okay, but you get Sundays off. All right? In all fasting times in Christianity, you never have to fast more than 6 days, just so you all know, just to cheer you all up. So when people tell you they fasted for 40 days, well, that's great, but you don't actually need to do that, because you shouldn't fast on the day of resurrection, because that's the great glorious feast. So Sundays, you always get Sundays off. that good? Yeah, I was excited. So you can eat on a Sunday. But at the point where you've fasted for 6 days, do you think it would be encouraging to know that the God that you worship and the God you're doing this for is there with you? He's comforting you. He's encouraging you. He's protecting you. He's not going to see you put to shame. You will eat again. You know, probably Wednesday was a bad day if you were fasting, because you're thinking, it's ages. You start off very confident on Monday. Tuesday, you're still feeling holy. Wednesday, you're feeling hungry. Thursday, you're thinking, oh, it's nearly Sunday. And then you build up. But Wednesday would probably be the day you want to hear this message. That God's with you. He's protecting you. He's comforting you. He's empowering you. He's strengthening you so that you can go through. Daniel deliberately did what he did. You ever thought about this? Daniel did this on purpose. Daniel got caught on purpose. Where did Daniel pray? In front of a window. And it very specifically states he is in front of the window and the windows are pointing to Jerusalem. In fact, I even think it says they're open. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. 3 times a day he knelt and prayed. The windows opened towards Jerusalem. He didn't do it in a locked room. He did it publicly. He made a statement. I'm here. I don't care what your decree says. I'm praying. And he probably did it out loud as well, just to make sure that everyone knew what he was doing and what he was saying. Because Daniel didn't want to live in a world where he couldn't worship his God freely. It wasn't some test by Daniel to see whether God would do anything. It was, if that's the way you're going to be, fine. But I know who I believe, and I know who I worship, and I know who it's worth pleasing and who it's not. So, bring it on. Daniel's in a great position. He's beloved by the king. He's about to become prime minister of all of the empire. But that doesn't mean he's above the law. The only person who appears to be above the law is the king. And we've worked out that's because he's an idiot. But Daniel is very much, this is who I am, and if you don't like me, then leave me alone. Or do something about it. That should give us an encouragement in our faith. We can spend an awful lot of our time thinking that we are being beaten and that we probably shouldn't tell anyone that we are Christians. Because it feels like the world's against us. I mean, just this is an example, okay? I'm not getting at the building, right? And I know why we have it the way we do. Just look at this building, right? What do you notice about this building? Apart from that one window's open. What else do you notice about this building? It's tall, yeah. Put yourself at street level. What can you see? A big building. Can you see through the windows? No. Where are the windows? We can measure this roughly. They're about 6 foot off the floor. Okay? You can just about see Toby's head. But only 2 inches of it. Okay? So it's 6 foot off the floor. What else are they? Are they clear? Or are they mottled? Mottled. Does that make a statement? And I say, I know why they're like that, and it's the way they built the building. It's nothing to do with us, because they built it 160 years ago or whatever. But it makes a statement. Are we scared to show the world who we are? Are we scared to proclaim? What, sorry? Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a fascinating question. You know, so this building was built at a point when Baptists were persecuted. So maybe you don't want everyone to see who's coming in and out the building because you're concerned about who might arrest you. Is that why we have it the way we do? I don't know. We'd have to probably look up the minutes as to why they decided to do it the way they do. But this isn't really the point. It's not about this building. It's about how do we proclaim Jesus wherever we are? Or do we, as the church in this country, because it's not just this church, go and look at St. Michael's. All their windows are stained glass. You definitely can't see in there. Yeah? Why do Christians feel we need to hide away? Maybe we need to learn a lesson from Daniel and know that God comforts us and encourages us and protects us. My dad once said something to me that I thought was very interesting. He was invited to a stag do. So he was a naval chaplain, and he was invited to a stag do. Now, the concept of my dad going to a stag do is always something that's fascinated me, because I can't possibly imagine that ever happening. But he was invited to this stag do, and he had to go to a pub in one of the back streets of Portsmouth, and all of the windows were smoked, and he was petrified to walk in. And do you know why he was petrified to walk in? Because he didn't know what he was walking into. He didn't often go in pubs, so he didn't know what he was walking into. And then he said to me this, he said, there are only three buildings on the high street, as it were, in our country that have smoked out windows, or windows you can't see through. He said, churches, dodgy pubs, and sex shops. There's a question. What is it we're... But the point is, if that's the way you feel because you're going to walk into a pub, why is it people don't come through our doors? Is it because they think they don't know what's happening in here? Are we hiding what's in here as much as we're trying to be hidden? And do we need to remember that God looks after us and protects us? And it doesn't matter if we proclaim who we belong to. He will look after us. He will protect us. He will comfort us. Because when the chips are down and you're in the middle of the lion's den, God turns up. So maybe this is a call to evangelism. Maybe it's a call to take out the entire wall and turn it into just one great big window, so that everyone can see what's going on. Or maybe it's just a call for us to remember to have confidence in the God who is with us and protects us. That there's nothing we can't face with him. Even ravenous beasts at the bottom of dens of lions. Amen. We're going to sing, He will hold me fast.
When I fear my faith will fail, Christ will hold me fast. When the tempter would prevail. he saves our history.